Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of the Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler Bishop, joined alongside me, as you've probably come to expect, Whitney Wright. Whitney, welcome back.
Hi, it's good to be back again.
Yeah, it's a pretty standard intro. I feel like I've been messing it up over like the course of the last month, so a nice smooth one. It makes me feel like the old days. I used to get up in front of people almost every week, and yeah, I feel like maybe that muscle is getting weaker.
Yeah, there was like one time you messed up your own name, so I think that you're doing a little bit better now.
Nowhere to go but up from there. Speaking of nowhere to go but up, it seems like the digital publishing like kind of news cycle is sort of like slowed a little bit. I feel like the sort of excitement around a lot of the AI stuff that's been happening is still there, but it's like, you know, for a minute it seemed like there was just these like big, maybe earth-shattering changes that we had maybe happening right in front of us. And now I think we've sort of like normalized sort of like the expectation that, yeah, AI is going to have something new each week. But like, yeah, I think a lot of the parties that are going to play a like role here, at least immediately, have sort of like showed their cards a little bit more.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely slowed down a bit. Looking for, you know, topics to talk about, it's not as readily available as it was before. And we are talking about AI a little bit still. But I think part of that pause is having to do with there being government concern regarding AI. And I think that a lot of businesses, especially, you know, like Bard and ChatGPT, I think they've kind of not paused, but there's less excitement about it because I think people are kind of waiting to see what's going to happen as far as like regulations and if anything is going to come forth with that. So, yeah, there was like a big boom there for a while, but I think now people are kind of taking a little bit of a break from pushing it too hard because they want to see kind of where things go first.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that component of it is, you know, the governments are concerned, and so should the public, us, all of us that watch the and listen, the public, because privacy and security are both what I think are our most immediate concerns with AI, and not in some sophisticated like code cracking way. I mean, in terms of, you know, it giving everyone the abilities of a, you know, professional penetration hacker or something like that. So I know that's one of the topics that you've got set up here for today. So a nice little segue for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about privacy regulation. We're going to be talking about AI and how popular it is. And then also the EU has ordered Google to sell off part of its ad tech. So that'll be what we wrap up with. So like you said, we're talking about privacy today. So this is from What's New in Publishing, and they're talking about privacy regulation and data transparency. And I think we can all relate to the fact that when there's like a terms and conditions, we all just click agree. And so
you gotta have no choice, right?
I know you don't. Exactly. Especially on my, yeah, Apple.
I mean, like,
if you don't agree, you can't use our product.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm not going to throw my phone away that I just bought because you like won't let me use it unless I like, it's like a shakedown, you know?
It is. And so there's, I mean, there's tons of like a lack of understanding and awareness of, you know, what's even in those things. Like, I don't know anyone that has ever read through any of them, but they're like novels. So of course you can't read through all of them. And so part of this issue is that companies can get away with stuff because it's in the terms and conditions and you agree to it. And one of the examples that this article gave was that Instagram was attempting to sell users photos without compensation because you agreed to it in the terms and conditions. And so
what do you mean by sell?
I don't know exactly what they mean. I don't know if they mean like they were selling them for advertisers maybe to use as far as like, like image for like a product or something. I'm not exactly sure what they mean by sell. It didn't really go into detail with that, but stuff like this, you know, happens a lot where I think, you know, Facebook has been, or Meta has been in trouble with something like this before. And then I love this act that they're coming up with. It's called TLDR, which I think is just perfect, the perfect name for it.
The government's going to make it lame.
Yeah, well, it might make it lame, but they're trying to better regulate, you know, like put it in plain, like have terms and conditions be more regulated in plain terms, shorter, understandable things that people can actually know what they're agreeing to. And so this article specifically was saying that the industry itself should take the initiative to regulate itself rather than the government stepping in. So what do you think? Do you think it's a government thing? Do you think the industry should regulate itself? Do you think it's a problem at all?
I mean, I think the government's proven itself, at least in the EU respect, to be ill-equipped to like actually regulate it well. I mean, mm-hmm. every intention of the previous acts like GDPR, even California CCPA, it's had pretty much the opposite effect of what they wanted. And it's added significant overhead costs and management costs to both publishers and end users. It's like, I mean, mm-hmm. Almost half the people that I know probably have some kind of extension or downloaded application on their phone that allows them to just automatically click and accept the cookies because it's so annoying when you go on mm-hmm. every website. I think the government is going to come up with these sort of like illy, clunky, thought out type ideas around how you implement these things. And so it's not necessarily the spirit of the legislation that I think is necessarily bad in these cases. It's more so the fact that you really need a granular level of expertise to be able to come up with an eloquent solution in terms of implementation that actually serves the purpose. So we're talking about a field like AI and a lot of other innovations that are happening right now as it relates to data privacy. And I think that's a hard job to begin with. And I definitely think it's a much harder job if you put it on the roles of people that are not, you know, experts. And and having served on a congressional board once before, I can tell you that even when experts are brought in, they're not actually driving very much or implementing very much that, you know, is actually seeing its way into the actual legislation. So not very bullish on the idea.
Yeah. What do you think is, well, I guess first off, do you see it as a problem as, you know, people just having to click agree to everything without being able to read it? And then what would be, I guess, a valid solution? Because this is, you know, publishers like you said, GDPR and CCPA, like they have to have, you know, allow cookies that pops up. And so that's kind of the solution right now. What is there a better solution that you know of or that you've heard of or thought of?
Well, I don't think. I think if you are not providing your information to the website itself, meaning like you're not filling out a form or something like that, which when you fill out the form, I think you can have the terms and conditions. I think everybody's pretty much fine with that. And I think it's an accepted practice because it's voluntary. Now, when you're going to a website to get content, you know, like and that cookie banner pops up, it's kind of like walking into a store and then saying like, hey, I need you to consent that we can use your credit card. Even mm-hmm. if you don't buy anything and it's, you know, information we don't use, your first thought is like, well, I don't really want to do that. Like, you know, I'd rather not, you know, because you just don't know if you're going to buy anything, whatever. And so I think that it actually does a disservice to both advertisers and publishers to sort of like value and identify an individual user prior to any kind of behavior that would suggest that they're valuable, finding what they need, et cetera. So I think you have to actually go back a step and say, if you want to use a browser, like this browser, I mean, Google already gives you modes, right? Like you have an incognito mode that is supposed to not track cookies and things like that. And then you've got like regular mode. So I think that's where this like data privacy conversation should be had is realistically where all the alleged anti-competitive practices are, where an ad exchange meets a browser, where an advertising platform meets an advertising exchange. These are areas that Google is, you know, like very dominant in, and they have the ability to sort of dictate, you know, the market. Rather than telling millions of websites, you've got to adhere to these sort of constraints, like, why don't we just have one party basically have this implemented upon them? I think that that's been the way to go since the start, and it's pretty obvious. So it sticks out to me that we probably won't get that one.
Probably not. I guess we'll see where that goes. I know privacy is always like a hot topic amongst, like, I don't know, it's because I feel like over the years it's become more and more popular, and like you know, we've talked about there's solutions that they've put in place, and I just don't really think that they've landed on anything that's really helpful.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that they do more harm than good. I think that they, in a lot of cases, are using this as a means of sort of taxing some of these like big tech platforms and companies, or at least that's how the EU has done it.
Mm-hmm. So like I mentioned earlier, we were talking about AI a little bit, and this is basically how you can slap an AI label on pretty much everything these days. And in tech, that's what's happening. So tech companies
organic
are applying
AI. Organic AI.
Yeah, exactly. Tech
CBD.
Companies. Yes. So, you know, you can see AI it's in everything. Artificial intelligence is labeled on a bunch of technologies. It's all this big hype right now. And advances in machine learning, pattern recognition, especially since ChatGPT was released, have it's just been booming. And I guess like what the topic is concerned about is just like slapping AI on everything, but like it's not everything is AI. And I think
not everything needs it, right?
Not everything needs it either. No. And so I thought that we could talk about like the difference between like, you know, or what exactly is AI. So the term has evolved over time, and the original goal was of duplicating human reasoning capabilities. And so now it's on like large scale pattern matching. And so if you could explain it to someone that is not technologically advanced in any way, like how would you explain what AI is and what it isn't?
I'll tell you what I tell all my friends and family that are basically like, I already don't want to hear this, like stop talking about it. So I'll give you the brief one, because I'm usually not a great summarizer, as you know. The biggest thing is that almost everything that we think of right now that, you know, that has an algorithm, whether it's Google search or Facebook that has a newsfeed algorithm, it's like you hear people say algorithm a lot. So an algorithm is basically like a set of rules, or you can think of it as an equation almost in terms of like what something should output. So like you search for a certain term, what qualities, what types of things are important that, you know, the search engine gathers up, that it weights so that it can basically give you the right results. An algorithm does that. Humans write those. It's like a math problem. Now, what artificial intelligence and, you know, realistically the first sort of set of artificial intelligence that we've seen implemented across a lot of different things is what they call machine learning. Machine learning is kind of a subset of artificial intelligence. I say kind of because there's a little bit of a debate around which one is a subset of the other. But realistically, they all are kind of under the artificial intelligence umbrella. You have artificial, like basically the human intelligence that sometimes gets conflated with the broader category. But machine learning is essentially the same process that humans go through of writing an algorithm, except the machine writes the algorithm and changes it. So the machine is going to look at all the variables, the things that it thinks are important, and gather them all up, and it's going to weight them according to whatever its goal is, which is the same thing a human does. The problem is a machine can do this in an instant. For a human to look through all the variables and run tests, it's very, very difficult to do it like anywhere close to what a machine can. And a human to do that and update it consistently, like in real time, would be very, very, it would just be impossible. So machine learning is basically a machine's writing the algorithm, taking into account all the data and the goals and no biases, unless you want to give it a bias. And then humans are writing an algorithm if it's an algorithm. And algorithms actually work better for a lot of things, if you think about it. Like, sometimes it's really straightforward, like how something should be decided. and you don't want a machine like getting too creative with that, right? So it's kind of reminds me of a couple years ago when everything was blockchain, you know, like crypto style, like everybody was trying to do, you know, buy houses and, you know, the deed is going to be an NFT. It's like that none of, I mean, like what people were describing is like, you don't need a blockchain for that. You don't need an NFT for that. Like these, you're just applying these technologies to situations that like already exist, and you're not the technology itself is not really changing how anything works. Artificial intelligence and machine learning are best used whenever it's like there's a significant improvement or exponential gain to be had by applying it. So like you can think of this sort of as, you know, machine learning and being able to, you know, look through thousands and thousands of different medical research studies to find, you know, correlations between certain diseases or medical interventions. Like for a human to go through that or even have, I mean, realistically, you could write an algorithm that could do that too. But that's what I mean is like there's so many things that artificial intelligence just really isn't needed for. But why it's blown up right now is now we have this natural language models like ChatGPT that make it very, very accessible. And a human can actually ask it questions and have it output to them what they need to actually take full advantage of these like new innovations. So that's where it's actually, you know, blown up most recently is really just sort of like its ability to communicate with us.
Right. I think that this article mentioned that, you know, implementing artificial intelligence or like saying that something now has artificial intelligence has made many products successful, but a lot of these are just refinements of the existing technologies and are not actually like AI advancements.
So I'll give everybody at home a bit of a homework assignment because I think there's a I've been doing this with a bunch of people here recently, including my wife, who just is like, I don't want to do that. so most of the technology, so you see probably each week, I mean, how many AI tools have you just noticed or just seen pop up? I mean, like you're pretty like in this space, so you probably get inundated with stuff. But how often do you see something you're like, oh, that's new?
Literally every day I see multiple new products and stuff. Especially yeah,
it's
recently
like impossible to keep track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Like what types of, but they're all sort of generally doing the same types of things, right? Like
yeah.
How many of them are like distinctly different, would you say?
Only a few, really. I mean, like they're all like technically doing different things, but it's like, it's all using like the same kind of like processes and stuff, or like it's just like plug in and like have it do something. I don't know. There's nothing that's like really blowing my mind so far. I mean, ChatGPT is pretty cool. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But like
yeah, the original sort of like innovation there is pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah, but it is kind of just like like you were kind of joking when we were starting the podcast, it's like throwing the word organic on something. Like it doesn't really mean anything anymore. Like,
yeah.
And that's how I feel with a lot of the AI products that I've seen.
Yeah. So I kind of liken this to, you know, like I think for the most part, every AI tool that you're finding out there is essentially just a white label ChatGPT or DALL-E or Midjourney that is like, all that's really kind of wrapped on top of it is, you know, like an extra prompt that's like, talk about this as if you're an email, like, coordinator, you know? Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
that's most of these technologies is that they've built a front end. So they just coded up, like, you can think of this, what outputs is HTML. And then they've just basically said, like, here's a, you know, either a field or a prompt or a set of, you know, selections like a form, and, you know, like based on your selections, it'll be if this, then that, and then it goes to ChatGPT. And the thing is most of these, if you were like, hey, ChatGPT, GPT-4, by the way, it'd be the way to go with this. Mm-hmm. So here's the assignment, GPT-4, whatever tool it is that you looked at that you're like, I could use that, ask it to make it for you. And I would just say, this key to this is asking it broadly first. It'll give you directions. Then ask it step by step, because it'll probably give you like 4 or 5 steps. And step one, say, how would I do that? And then if you don't know something, or it's asking you to do something that you don't know, ask it about that thing. And just keep going on, and you'll be surprised that within an hour, you may actually have built that exact tool that somebody else has, you know, built and is trying to sell now. And on top of that, it'll be, number one, you'll save money. Number two, I bet you learn exponentially more about how some of this works, and then also about the web and how stuff is deployed and how some of these technologies work together. And one of the things that I've been seeing among like publishers and those that are sort of like taking on this sort of like, I'll have it build for me what I need and learn along the way, is that they become like, all of a sudden they're like, I feel like I've gotten a decade of learning in the last like 6 months just from, you know, following its directions. So it's a great way to learn too. It may be the future of education.
Yeah. I saw an article, talking about how like by 2035, we're going to see like the peak, or, you know, I guess in this area of time, you know, who knows about the way future, but like in 2035, we'll really start to see the peak of like what AI can do as far as like medical advances, education. Like, it's the future of so many different things. And the reason why I guess I brought up this article in the first place was kind of like, you know, like you were joking, like it's like slapping organic on something or saying something's grass-fed. Like, you can't really believe those things anymore. You kind of have to do your research on the company to make sure that like they're actually following those practices and what organic actually means to that company. And I would say for publishers, just make sure you're doing your due diligence on like what is AI and what's not, because you could be wasting your time and money on something that like isn't really doing you any favors.
Yeah, and in some instances, you know, like AI is the right thing, and sometimes it's not. And, you know, a lot of times it's all just ChatGPT under the hood too. So mm-hmm. That's where I think, you know, learning some of this stuff and doing some of these projects, you'll see how easy it is. And it'll make it to where it's like you'll see the value in actual tools that need and use these things for something that's unique. And you mentioned the 2035 thing. One thing I'll add to that is that I think the reason we're going to see this sort of like, I think we're going to hit the trough of disillusionment a little bit with some things, because I think we're mm-hmm. all so impressed right now in many regards to what it can do. And I think the sort of like, where's the cancer like cure, and where's, you know, these sort of like really large scale things that people think it'll be able to do next. I think those things will take a little while, because mm-hmm. right now it's working off of all the data that basically is on the web that it can collect. So it's got a lot of information that it can like parse and, you know, provide different types of things for. But now that we have it, you realize what type of information it needs and what type of information would need to be collected for it to solve some of these large scale problems. And that's actually the challenge now when you think about things. If you're going to do, you know, some type of research, you know, the goal should be like, what data can I collect that a machine learning model could actually use to, you know, make a good decision here? Because my guess is that for most of these challenges and problems, the data that we've collected, the data that we have, is not good enough for artificial intelligence to really provide, you know, much value yet.
Yeah, definitely. So our last topic is that Google has been ordered by the EU to sell off part of its ad tech business. So this has been an ongoing investigation, I think, for the past 2 years. And so they finally came to a conclusion, and the EU has ordered Google to divest parts of its advertising business due to accusations of monopolistic practices. We've seen this in the United States as well. It's called the America Act, but it's not, I don't think it's progressed as the EU's version of it. And so the EU Competition Commission found that Google favored its own advertising technology services over competing providers, which harms advertisers and online publishers. The solution proposed by the commission is to force Google to, you know, divvy up some of its stuff. And the immediate impact is not certain right now. Google has some time to respond and come up with an answer, basically. So they don't have to, you know, split up right now, but that's what the EU has suggested. And so Google now has time for a rebuttal to give some solutions. So I don't know, have you been following this at all?
Yeah, I have. I've been following it for a long time. It's actually, I mean, it's clearly something that, you know, like I can only say so much, because number one, like we're a Google partner,
right?
The company that I helped start. And at the same time, this has been an area that I've been very outspoken on. And so I think the biggest thing that I kind of point out here is that the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, I think, originally reported Google favoring its ad products and things like that. And what it's described is a fair exchange in many cases. And I think the reason why it's taken so long, partially for some type of action or, you know, like ruling on this to occur is because, I mean, the number of people that have the expertise that can explain this and also guide sort of like a ruling that would actually, you know, make this something that's not either worse or ineffective takes a lot of time. Kind of like what we were talking about earlier in terms of regulating data privacy. It's like this is actually a lot more straightforward than that, yet it's very, it's still very hard to regulate properly. So, I mean, data privacy is so much bigger of a problem. But the biggest thing with this is I look at something in terms of whether the ruling is it goes through or not. I would say that if it happens in the EU, I bet it happens in the United States because I would bet there'd be reciprocity there. So whether or not they would admit to any kind of collusion or anything like that in terms of, you know, legislation, it clearly is going to benefit Google and all users if they coordinate a little bit better on that. And both have very similar cases against the tech giant that would sort of, I'd be surprised if they both went in completely different directions in terms of ruling. With that said, I mean, this is a crime. I mean, yeah. I'm not talking about like whether or not they rule that they have to break that up and that they're in, you know, breach of antitrust or anti-competitive practices. I think everybody else that's listening probably has a strong opinion about that, and it's probably the right one. But realistically, it's like Google said this is a fair exchange. It wasn't a fair exchange. They knew it. When asked if it was a fair exchange and in the face of a real accusation that this is not fair and that there was proof, someone lied and said that it was, and it that proved to be false. Somebody knew that, and this was a large scale, what I mean, I would estimate amounts to grand larceny for sure, because I think that's like a very, very small amount of money actually. So this is a crime, and so regardless of whether or not it's ruled this way, I think that one of the things that is frustrating about this ecosystem is that if we're not going to punish criminals that are taking advantage of citizens of every world government and just users in general, we can expect this to continue to occur. And I think that it's healthy for us to go through these you know, evolutions. Because I think you look at Microsoft in the early 2000s, they went through it with a browser. They came out stronger. You know, like Internet Explorer died anyways, you know. And I think it probably helped Microsoft to not, like, care so much about that sort of, like, dominant tool. And I think the same could be said for Google. So we'll see. I go 50-50 if they would actually rule for them to break it up. But I'd imagine that to take a while.
Yeah, definitely. This is not going to happen anytime soon. So as far as publishers go, what would publishers benefit? How would this affect publishers if Google does kind of divvy up some of its different ad tech?
It would benefit publishers. It would benefit them, but it would create a heightened challenge for management. So right now, with Google being able to control so much from both the ad buying to the, you know, ad selling and auction and everything like that, it makes it to where there's a lot in there that can't be managed by the publisher, which is a good thing because it's very, you know, like straightforward and easy. But all those things that you can't control and don't get any choices over, and the lack of data transparency, et cetera, that's all value and money on the table that Google is taking that the publisher should probably get. And if you know sort of like what those levers are and you're able to sort of navigate that properly, you're going to make more money. You'll be in a more successful position, et cetera. But the biggest issue with that is that a lot of what Google has done up until this point is going to, like, it'll surprise a lot of publishers, I think, sort of just all the shit there is to manage, for lack of a better term, because there's just a lot out there. And I think when I rail against middlemen in the ecosystem, I think a lot of people are like, yeah, you know, like, how many are there? Like, I only have to deal with one or two. But the reality is that there's thousands and thousands of them, and they're all of these, like, small incremental layers, and being able to sort through that is going to be challenging. But who knows? Maybe AI.
Maybe it'll slap AI on it and it'll fix everything. Yeah, so yeah, even though that this would benefit publishers, I guess not a concern, but something that could happen is that it makes earning money more complex, because it's not all
for
through
sure.
Google. And that'll be a whole different mess. If this happens, it'll be a whole different mess that I'm
and,
sure.
And my guess is that there'll still be, like, integrated solutions to eliminate that complexity. But the biggest thing is it's more of a philosophical debate in a lot of regards, in terms of, as a publisher, like, what you think the right course of action would be here. Because reality is that, you know, it is less complex, but there's a trade-off. It's like everything, where it's like you're going to trade the lack of complexity for, like, missed value. However, you're going to increase the complexity, but you get more options and more flexibility, which delivers more value. And so, like, it's either or. You can't have both, really. And if you're okay with complexity and flexibility, then I would say, like, yeah, you definitely want this. And if you're afraid of that, I would say you're probably a little bit concerned. But I think, you know, you want to give people the option either way. And I think, you know, I would imagine that there'd still be very simple solutions out there. It wouldn't be that much more complex. But if you wanted to extract the maximum value, you would probably have to get a little bit more involved, or it'd be a little bit more of a managed process, the way that things work today, if you were to, you know, want to make the most amount of money on your website or something.
Yeah. And I think that this is, you know, Google's just kind of the poster child of this right now, for better or worse. And so I think that this is just the beginning. I think, you know, big tech is going to be under scrutiny, you know, from here on out, basically, because it's like, you know, if one company's doing it or doing, you know, something like this, it's almost certain that there's other big tech companies.
I mean, Amazon would never, like, take all the data from all of their you know, sellers inside of Amazon and then use that to go and create competitive products for a lower price point and higher margin, would they?
Never, ever.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of applications of this across the board. I think generally I love history. And I think if you look back to the Industrial Revolution, it added so much value. But shortly thereafter, you got this big labor movement. And then after the labor movement, you sort of had this, like, reining in and regulation of a lot of the resource giants and things like that, railroads, et cetera. And you saw, like, government integration. You saw the rise of oligarchies. You could argue that the United States is actually an oligarchy. I think the UN has made that argument. So I think one of the things that you can look at with this is that the technology revolution it's been underway for 20 years. And I think with AI coming aboard and people being able to actually not need the giant tech companies quite as much all of a sudden, because, you know, they sort of laid the foundation, they built the roads, if you will. And now everybody has a car. So, you know, like, we're not beholden to them. You know, I think we're going to see things swing back the other way, where I think you're going to see this sort of, like, it's not going to be freewheeling the way that it's been. And I think we'll see sort of like a consolidation of innovation and maybe a conglomeration of a lot of other tech companies in the space. And then I think, you know, it's contracting or expanding at all times, universal theory. So I think, yeah, there's a good chance that all these big tech companies get reined in a little bit here over the next 5-6 years.
Yeah, and probably for the better. So was there anything else that you've seen in the news or anything we talked about that you wanted to expand upon?
No, I don't think so. I've been watching Black Mirror again, and there's a new season out.
I need to start that.
Here's the thing. I cannot sell it on this show because when I watched episode 3, it just hung over me like a cloud and still kind of does. I warned everybody like in our building the other day that was we were talking about it. I was like, if you guys haven't seen episode 3 yet, I'm just going to warn you. I wish I wouldn't have watched it.
Ooh, is it about AI?
And it's not from a it's just like one of those really dark, dark things where I'm just like, there's enough darkness around, you know, like I need some light. And, but I think one of the things that's fascinating about it is, you know, I was interested to see how this season, approached technology because it's been this sort of like, you know, they call it Black Mirror, but it's like a darker look at sort of like where technology is taking us. And, I was like, well, if you look at some of the past episodes, they feel too real now. You know, it's like the whole idea is that you kind of extrapolate out into the future, this sort of like extreme scenario. But, you know, like to continue on the path that they're on, I couldn't imagine a scenario in which it wasn't just sort of like, yeah, this seems too real, you know? And they've done a good job of striking that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's funny because they lean away from technology a little bit, I feel like, with it.
Interesting. Okay.
And I think that the reason for that is that a lot of the innovation that we have in front of us, I think it's easy to anticipate that it'll be technological. I think that there's going to be untold innovation in other areas that are equally as impactful. And I think it's a really good idea to keep a close eye on what those might be as a publisher, because I think, you know, these emerging fields are going to have opportunities because, news, documentation, knowledge, resources, those are all things that, you know, generally pop up whenever something is, you know, new and growing. So yeah, keep your eyes open.
Definitely. Well, if you enjoy listening to this podcast, we would love if you left us some reviews on, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever.
And even if you don't enjoy listening, you can lie.
You can lie and you can still give us a 5-star review. You can find this podcast wherever you find podcasts. You can watch us on YouTube. We have a video version of this. We also have publisherlab.org where you can find the list of episodes. And there is a spot at the top. If you have a podcast suggestion, a critique, a topic that you want us to talk about, you can leave us a line there and we will address it on the podcast. You can also leave us YouTube comments and we will address those as well. And we want to thank you for dropping in on another episode of the Publisher Lab.
One more thing, Whit, before everybody leaves. I promised a plugin for WordPress. If you go on my GitHub, you can actually get the plugin. So it's listed under Shibaless Press, I think. Shiba Pressless, something like that. So if you want it, once you install it, it's just going to output locally a folder with all your posts written in Markdown. However, it's like, what do I do next with that? So what I'm actually working on now, and I'll make this available to people that want to do an experiment, it's actually going to make all your content portable. So you could basically just toss in the plugin and it'll spit out basically something that is very easy to connect to headless CMS, bring into another WordPress site. You could have ChatGPT convert it all just to plain HTML. You could host it for free. You could throw it into 1,000 different designs and themes ready to go. This has been something that headless CMS have promised forever. But actually, the solution is pretty simple. So I'll throw it out there. And if people are interested, we'll start building some different sort of like designs and themes and stuff like that that people can use or maybe edit themselves. So I'd advise it for maybe the slightly more technical at first, but it's pretty cool what's available now.
We do podcast recaps on our blog, and I will make sure and find it and link it in there if you're interested in checking that out. If you can't find Shiba Lists, Shiba whatever.
Yeah, I forget what I named it. Everything I make is called Shiba something.
All right. Well, thank you again for listening to another episode of the Publisher Lab.